Welcome to the Patent Law Career Strategies tutorial. We've put this tutorial together to serve as a blueprint for a career as a patent attorney or a patent agent. Stepping into a new career field is exhilarating. You've prepared intellectually, organized your materials, and pictured yourself in your new identity. Whether you're fresh out of school or making a major career change, you've finally arrived at the elusive answer to the question you were asked as a kid. What do you want to be when you grow up? Then reality hits. You're not quite there yet. You have to find a job, hopefully a job that will be well-paying, stimulating but not too stressful, and include great coworkers. For some job seekers, that process is a breeze. For many, and perhaps most, it's an emotional roller coaster that can wreak havoc on their exhilaration and self-confidence. The purpose of this book is to make this process as easy as possible. While there are never any guarantees, by following the suggestions in this book, you can rest assured that you're on the right track. This book takes the guesswork out of the process and, in controversial job hunting approaches, shows you the pros and cons so that you can decide what approach to choose. Part 1, The Big Picture, is about strategy. It shows you how to position yourself within the patent law field to become the professional you want to be, as well as the person you want to be. The first chapter encourages you to articulate your career path, the values you bring to your job search, and the kind of job you're seeking in regard to issues not particular to the field of patent law. For example, do you want a job where weekend work is expected? Do you value variety or stability in your work life? Chapter 1 concludes with a checklist of questions to help you articulate your priorities. The second chapter is an introduction to the field of patent law. It discusses the choices you will make, or have made, that will define the kind of work you do. Do you want to be a patent agent or a patent attorney, a prosecutor or a litigator? How does your choice of specialty shape the kind of work you'll most likely do, and vice versa? What are the advantages and disadvantages of working in small versus large firms? After reading these first two chapters, you should have a better sense of the kind of job you want. Part 2, Preparing for the Job Search, lines you up with the resources and documents you'll need once you hit the market. Chapter 3, Creating Your Resource Portfolio, addresses the various documents you could prepare before launching your job search. What should you absolutely have ready ahead of time? What can you do to set yourself apart from the crowd? What should you keep track of? In-depth coverage is given to resources like writing samples, positioning statements, and scripts for interview preparation and networking conversations. It also stresses the advantages of identifiers, such as business cards and websites. Chapter 4 addresses references, which can make or break your candidacy for a job. Selecting good references and ensuring they will represent you in the best possible terms is an art form. This chapter walks you through the process. You'll learn what factors to consider when choosing references, what information to give your references at various stages of the process, and the types of follow-up available. The first two sections of the book arm you for your job hunt, which, if you have prepared well, should go fairly smoothly. Part 3, Finding Opportunities, gets you into the trenches. There are four main ways to find a job you love: finding and answering job ads, researching and contacting potential employers, working your way toward the job you want, and networking. Chapter 5 describes the first three of those tactics and how to approach each of them. In addition to showing how to research available jobs and target companies, it discusses the advantages and disadvantages of particular approaches. For example, when is it a good idea to apply for a job that doesn't quite fit your skill set? Should you send your resume and a form letter to target companies? What should you consider when pursuing a long-distance job search? Chapter 6 takes a deep look at the fourth tactic, networking. Not only is networking crucial in many successful job searches, it also instills habits that provide the foundation for a successful career. This chapter explores everyday networking, how to generate contacts, and walks you through what to do before, during, and after a networking meeting. Part 4, After the Offer, addresses short and long-term issues to keep in mind once your job-seeking efforts have paid off. Chapter 7 addresses the two most important factors to consider when you receive a job offer: how to decide whether to accept the offer, and when and how to negotiate the compensation. It includes specific actions you can take. For example, visit the workplace, meet with your peers. Chapter 7 also reveals what information to gather. What is the governance structure of the organization? What kind of support is there for patent agents who want to pursue their JD? It provides issues to ponder, such as how this job offer lines up with the priorities you articulated in Chapter 1. Then it helps you to determine if it's a good idea to ask for more money. Finally, it addresses how to lobby for more compensation. What research should you do to prepare your pitch? When should that compensation be in the form of benefits, as opposed to salary? After reading this book, you will have a map and a plan of attack for your job hunting efforts. While there are other places offering career advice and assistance with this process, this book is inclusive. It will prepare you for your satisfactory job search and help you secure a rewarding career in patent law. Chapter 1. Know what you want. The very first thing you should do before launching your job search is to pause and fully consider not just what you want to be, but who you want to be when you grow up. Look at the big picture, which includes a strategic timeline of where you've been and where you're going in your career. Determine how you want your career to fit in with the rest of your life. Even if you have a strong sense of identity and priorities, it's important to lay them out and have them at hand throughout the process. Let's look at the reasons why. First, searching for a terrific job can be really exciting, which, ironically, can become a problem. Envision your most successful job search. What does it look like? If you're like most people, it will resemble one of these two scenarios. Number one, you've applied for jobs and networked with the right people. Your excellent credentials and dazzling personality are immediately rewarded. You receive a whirlwind of interviews, invitations to power lunches and dinners, as well as meetings with impressive people at attractive and lucrative firms. Your vision might be more low-key and less power-focused, but it will likely still be promising and successful, putting the job you want at your fingertips. Number two, those who are more job-hunt-phobic might envision the second scenario. This job search is more cut to the chase. You find the perfect position and have one incredible interview. You're immediately offered the job and, whew, it's over. These fantasies actually do come true, and it's not all that rare. The problem in both scenarios is it's very easy to get swept up and lose focus on what you want. The former case can make you believe you are a superstar, entitled to the very best. As a result, you reach for the shiniest star in the constellation of job offers. But while it looks attractive at the moment, it might not be what you really want in life. In the one interview fantasy, the job seeker is often so delighted and relieved to have an offer that they fail to think about what they want. Many people in the world, all over, not just in patent law, are brilliant and have amazing credentials. A good number of these people want to have both a fun and stimulating job and personal time, whether it's time with their families, to notice the seasons changing, or to read books or pursue other hobbies. During their job search, they are interviewed by other brilliant people with amazing credentials who have a great job but don't have that time. Suddenly, time becomes abstract compared to the other compensations the job promises. They take the higher status but more demanding job and later regret it. In addition to getting caught up in the interview process, job searches which are successful can result in unanticipated pressure. This is commonly caused by two different things. Number one, money squeeze inflation. You crunch the numbers, determining what it will take to pay off your debt, fix your house, and start a college fund for your child. Then, you find out that you might make more than you expected. So, you crunch the numbers again, figuring out how much you need to pay off your debt, move into a bigger house, and start a college fund for your child and any children you have in the future. The money you need has now grown. Suddenly, the salary that seemed perfectly reasonable the first time you crunched the numbers throws you into a panic. Number two, I call a version of this dynamic among very highly paid attorneys stuck with a boat syndrome. People take well-paying jobs, thinking it'll be temporary, and 10 years later, they've raised their standard of living and bought a yacht, even though they have never been interested in boating. Now, they have to keep the job, even if they hate it, in order to make payments on their yacht. Obviously, it's not always a yacht, but you get the idea. It's peer pressure. What more accurately might be called superior pressure? The source of peer pressure is often your references. Here's a typical example. Your mentor, a boss, former boss, or possibly a professor, becomes very invested in your success. Perhaps the person spends a great deal of time helping you network and calling in favors to assist you in landing that perfect job. He or she might be the first person you contact to serve as one of your references. However, the job they're helping you get might not be your perfect job. It's the mentor's perfect job. While the mentor thinks you'd be a fool not to take the job, you worry that the mentor truly does think you're a fool. To counter this pressure, make sure your mentor understands why it's not your perfect job. If that doesn't work, you should be prepared to act according to your priorities. This pressure can also stem from a spouse, parent, or colleague, although mentors are often the culprit because they know the field and might have a professional investment in your future. The incidents described above imply that the primary dilemma one might face is a money versus quality of life choice. This may be true. An enormous salary dangling in front of your nose can certainly get your attention. Sometimes, though, it's at the expense of other issues. While patent law generally pays quite well, pay isn't the only dilemma you might face. There are all many particulars to heed in the headlines of the job search. The kind of work that will be required, co-workers, expected level of productivity, extent of supervision, travel expectations, etc. Even in a best-case scenario, it's important to keep your eyes on the prize. But first, you need to know what that prize is. Ideally, you'd like to have all the offers you're going to get in hand. In reality, different offers have a remarkable ability to stagger in with the worst possible timing. If you keep your focus on what you want, you'll be in a better position to evaluate each offer on its own terms, which also makes you less likely to regret a decision afterward. Moreover, embarking on a new career almost always involves some degree of compromise. You'll usually have to start at the entry level and work your way up. You might also need to be willing to do other things, like start out at a big law firm when you'd rather be self-employed, or relocate geographically to a place with more opportunities, though you might keep the goal of returning to where you live now. One of the keys to keeping steady during the job search process, and one of the keys to succeeding at the job search process, is to maintain a clear sense of your priorities, what you'd prefer, boundaries, what you aren't willing to do, and where different aspects of a particular job fit within that spectrum. That way, if you get a job offer that's okay but not great, you'll have a better sense of how it fits into your big picture vision. You'll be able to determine if accepting it would be a strategically valuable compromise, or you'd be haunted by a nagging sense that you'd settle for less than you wanted if you do accept the job. Keeping your big picture in mind helps you map out your strategy and reveals how different positions would fit, or not fit, into that strategy. It also makes you a stronger candidate as you go through the process. This reflection will provide valuable information to both you and potential employers. For example, it can lead to more thoughtful or strategic conversation in an interview, which in turn can lead to a job offer or even to a higher salary offer. On one more psychological level, having a big picture in mind can boost your confidence in your interview skills and other forms of self-presentation. You know who you are, and that person may be flexible, but he or she isn't a pushover. What does it take to create this big picture? Different issues apply to different people, of course. Even with patent law, which seems like a fairly narrow field, there is a huge range of backgrounds and wish lists, including both personal and professional goals. This chapter and the next one map out the factors to consider as you plan your career. The next chapter, Patent Law 101, addresses issues specific to patent agents and patent attorneys. The remainder of the current chapter addresses the more general issues. You might have already answered some of the questions in both chapters. Some of them might require more consideration or research. If you don't know or don't care what the answers are to some questions, that leaves possibilities open. For example, if you don't care where you live, your search can be nationwide in scope. I strongly encourage you to write down your responses to the issues raised in this chapter in the accompanying workbook. At the very least, annotate these pages. When you get a chance, highlighting the issues that are most important to you and/or specific answers to some of the questions. Geographical considerations. Perhaps the most significant choice affecting a person's job search, at this stage and later stages, is where they can or want to live. Local job searches are a completely different beast from national, or international for that matter, searches, though there is a bit of continuum between the two. For example, a regional search is more like a national search. A driving distance search may be more like a local search. There are reasons for having geographical commitments. Here are just a few. Number 1. Your spouse has a job that's tied you to your present location. Number 2. You're divorced and want to live near your children. Number 3. Your parents live close by and they aren't getting any younger. Number 4. You hate cold or hot weather. Number 5. Proximity to landscape conducive to hobbies, like rock climbing, surfing, scuba diving, hiking, etc. Number 6. The culture and ethnic makeup of your surroundings. Number 7. You simply feel that a certain place is your home, whether it's an urban or rural setting. Few geographical commitments are absolutely, objectively mandatory, and few are absolutely objectively frivolous. At one extreme, plenty of couples live apart and commute to see each other on weekends. At the other, some people are seriously miserable in certain climates, and it's true, some people complain about it, but actually don't care. Only you can decide what your constraints are and how important they are to you. Decide what they are. Write them down. They may be very specific, like, I need to live in the Detroit metropolitan area. Or they may be more general, like, I need to live in the South. They may also be specifically geographical, like the preceding two, or they may be features of certain kinds of geographical areas. I need to live somewhere where there's a relatively large Chinese-American population. Or I need to live somewhere where I can ride horses. If there are certain things you need and others that you want, make two lists. For example, maybe you want to work within 90 miles of your home. Perhaps that's the figure at the need level, but actually it's not unrealistic to think that you could work within 10 miles of where you live. Another issue to consider is short versus long-term geographical constraints. Perhaps you want to live near aging relatives in 10 or 20 years, but you don't necessarily need to be near them now. Or you're willing to travel to the coast to surf during vacations for the next couple of years, but you don't want it to be a permanent state of affairs. If that's the case, you need to strategize about your overall career trajectory. You might gain from looking everywhere for jobs and then returning to where you want to be. In other cases, it's more productive to accept a job in your current location, build a local network, and maximize your options locally. If you don't have any geographical constraints and are conducting a national search, theoretically, this should help you to find more and better jobs. In practice, whether it helps or hinders you depends on several things. The problem isn't complicated. Some employers simply don't like to interview people who aren't in town, or at least within reasonable driving distance. So they will toss your resume in the reject pile if you don't list a local address. The factors that mitigate the problem are complicated. The major one is your rank, status, and credentials. The more highly credentialed you are, the higher the degrees you have, the better the schools, the higher your GPA, the more likely it is that employers will give your resume a second look and scramble to interview you, paying all your expenses, of course. The same is true for your field of specialization. If it's relatively rare but in demand, you are in great shape. Basically, the harder it would be to find a substitute for you, the more potential employers are willing to invest on the chance that you'll move to their location. Of course, the converse is also true. If you're an entry-level patent agent with no legal experience and a BS in, say, chemistry, it will be more difficult to get hired outside of your present locality. You'll face the same out-of-towner job search if you want to live somewhere other than where you live right now. It may be best to conduct your search from your intended location, rather your present one. If that's not possible, You may want to travel to where you're interested in living so you can spend some time networking locally and making yourself available for interviews. Employment priorities. Past jobs. One of the best ways to determine what's important to you in a job is to scrutinize the jobs you've had in the past. One by one, think about every job you've had, including your current job. For each job, do the following. Number 1. Write down the first 3 things that come to mind when you remember that job. It could be good or bad, like, I hated that job. My boss was totally inconsistent, and I never knew where I stood. Or, I remember staggering home after dark. Or something good, like, that was a really nice office, and I could listen to music. If a particular characteristic of a job stands out, chances are it's something you'd prefer to avoid or replicate in future jobs. Number 2. Having captured your first impressions, now let yourself remember that job more deeply. What else would you like to have in a future job? And what would you like to avoid? Think about everything. The kinds of tasks you did, the people you worked with, even things like how you had lunch. At your desk, business lunches, lunch with friends, a trip to the gym. Employment priorities. The future of your career. Ask yourself the following questions. Number 1. What would you ideally like your job, this job that you're about to get, to be like? Be as specific as possible, and don't be afraid to think big. Number 2. What would you ideally like your job to be like in 10 years? Think mid-career. Do you think you'll advance along the same track, or will you switch tracks? For example, if you're a patent agent, do you hope you'll be litigating cases in 10 years? Number 3. What would you ideally like your job to be like at its acme? That is, how far would you like it to have progressed? Do you want to become a partner at a prestigious law firm? To go into business for yourself? What characteristics of your situation will tell you that you've arrived at where you want to be in your career? Values brainstorm. The list of possible conditions that can affect your satisfaction at a particular job is enormous. The following list is intended to cover most of the typical priorities and working conditions that people value. Not everything on the list matters to everyone. A few, if any, jobs offer someone everything they want. Here are 3 helpful tips on how to use this list. First, highlight or write down on a separate piece of paper those items which are most important to you at this stage. Since it is in question form, you may want to write down your answers to the questions. If some items are important to you, but you honestly don't know what your answer is, you may want to write down the question and, number 1, research, talk to others, or in some other way, try to uncover an answer. Number 2, let it remain in the back of your mind so that an answer can evolve. Or number 3, let it stay in question form and revisit it as the job search process shifts from abstract questions of preference to concrete questions of what options are actually available to you in specific job settings. Second, use the list as a brainstorming tool to help you think about other factors important to you in your job search. Write them down so you don't forget them. Third, after you have been offered a job, but before you accept it, or, put another way, when you reach Chapter 7 of this book, go back through the list and consider the questions in light of the offer. Try to answer most or all of the questions. Unless a question is not important to you, don't make assumptions about the answer. Go find the actual answer, not just what you expect the answer would be. The details of how you can do so, along with other advice for this stage, are in Chapter 7. Let's go through the values brainstorm checklist here. Please keep in mind that for each question, you should rate it as very important, somewhat important, or not important. We've included a workbook for you to write this down later on. Values brainstorm checklist. Money. How important is money to me relative to other features a job has to offer? Is there a minimum salary in order for me to consider a position? If so, what is it? This issue can be related to the salary you need, or the salary you want, or insist on. That is, it's not necessarily just about whether you can afford your mortgage. It can be that you have a figure in mind, hopefully a realistic figure, and you don't want to accept any offer that doesn't match or exceed that figure. Relationships with coworkers. How important is it to me to have great relationships with my coworkers? Do I want them to be my friends as well as colleagues? Do I want to socialize with coworkers outside of work? Do I want to work with the same team of people over time, and to what extent do I want the people I work with to change or rotate? Do I prefer a work environment where people are treated like equals, or a more explicitly hierarchical environment? If I value my collegiality, does that include support staff or just my peers? Supervisory relationships. How important is it to me to have a great relationship with my supervisor? Do I like to be closely supervised? Do I want to be mentored? Often, one comes with the other. A mentor is more involved with your work, and some people would rather be left alone to figure things out for themselves. How important is regular positive reinforcement? Do I want to work where my contributions are explicitly appreciated, or am I okay in an environment where praise is limited? How important to me is regular feedback? Do I want to work where I am being evaluated regularly, or where I have an annual review? How important is it to me to be a supervisor, to have power and control over others? Do I want to be a mentor to others? Variety and stability. Do I want travel to be a part of my job? Do I want to have a lot of contact with a variety of people, not just coworkers, on a regular basis? Do I want my work to be predictable? To what extent do I want it to be varied? Do I want the evolution of my job to involve depth, becoming increasingly involved in and knowledgeable about a specialty? And to what extent do I want it to involve breadth, expanding my fields of competency? Am I interested in doing other intellectual property work in addition to patent work? This question applies if you are an attorney or, in the long term, if you plan to become one. How much job security do I want? Would the prospect of losing my job, say, at a firm where it's hard to make partner, light a fire under me in a good way, or just eat away at my stomach lining? Do I want to work somewhere where people are generally happy with their jobs? To what extent do I thrive in a competitive environment? To what extent do I enjoy or dislike working under intense pressure? How important is it to me to work in a democratic environment where decision-making is shared among a large group or all of the organization's employees? Do I want to be able to work from home? How important is it to me that my employers be invested in me or committed to my success? How important is it that my environment includes diversity? What kind of diversity are important to me? Racial, ethnic, gender, sexual orientation, class? From the standpoint of professional expertise, to what extent do I like being the only person like me in my workplace? More specifically, do I want to work somewhere where most of my colleagues are also in the patent law field, or patent agents and attorneys, or do I want to work and interact with people in different legal fields, or non-legal fields if you're interested in a position outside a law firm? To what extent do I prefer to work in an extremely professional setting, and to what extent do I prefer to work in a more casual setting? Does the idea of wearing a suit every day seem classy or oppressive? How important to me is the physical setting in which I work? Do I have requirements, for example, wheelchair accessibility, or preferences, like an office with a window? Do I want to work in an upscale environment? Power, status, and control. How important is status to me? To what extent am I motivated by other people's admiration or respect? Whose admiration or respect do I want? Status within the legal community or within the patent law field is not the same thing as status among, say, your extended family. How important is it to me to have power and control over aspects of my work? How important is it to me to be a leader, to be responsible for decision-making? Do I want to cultivate my own clients or have others assign me existing clients? Do I want to be a big fish in a small pond, or do I prefer an environment with lots of big fish, people as important or more important than me? Work-life balance. Do I want to work somewhere where work-life balance is explicitly valued? How much time do I want to be able to spend with my family? How important is it to me to have control over the consistency or predictability of that family time? For example, do I want to know that I'll be able to take time off for important family events? Do I mind being very busy during some periods if I can be less busy at other times? To what extent do I want to keep clear and specific working hours, usually the typical 8 or 9 a.m. to 5 p.m.? And to what extent do I want to be able to control the hours of my workday? For example, some people have a strong preference for working late at night, but they also want to be able to come in late in the morning. How important to me is it to have a manageable commute to work? What do I mean by manageable? How consuming do I want my work to be? Do I want to be able to walk away from it when I leave work and not think about it until I return? Or do I want a job with issues I mull over or strategize about them even when I'm not at work? To what extent am I willing to work overtime, generally evenings and weekends? Do I have a strong preference for working overtime on my own terms? Put another way, am I willing to realize at 5 p.m. on Friday that I'll probably need to come in on Saturday and Sunday? Or do I want a job where I can decide in advance how to allocate any hours I spend beyond the 40-hour week? Having considered the questions in this chapter, you should have a map in your head, and possibly on paper, that includes your preferences, as well as your priorities. Your preferences are the answers to the various questions. Your priorities are the questions that stand out as the most important features of your work life. Don't be surprised if these preferences and priorities change during the job search process. What you have to gauge is whether the changes are real, based on new information that changes your attitude toward a particular preference, or based on changes in your situation, or whether you're being influenced by the job search process itself. When things go well, you can get swept up in the glamour of it all. When things aren't going well, you can get discouraged. As a result, your standards of what constitutes a good job may change. Your preferences and priorities should be accessible to you, mentally and or in writing, during the entire job search process. View them looking over your shoulder, providing guidance as you make decisions. But before you set them up in that position, put them into dialogue with the material in the next chapter, where we look at some of the major decisions you'll make as you situate yourself within the patent law field.